want to get started?
So your golf game's that bad?
We're really pleased to be here on the Snow College campus today.
He's a pretty...
And especially so as we have an opportunity to thank President Gary Carlston for his... For all of his service to higher education, to public education, to the state of Utah. As he finishes a great career, we want to thank Gary and his lovely wife, Janet, and wish them the very best. We're going to turn the time over to President Carlston to provide a little bit of a report on the college.
Thank you, Chair Simmons. You know, is my mic on? Maybe I muted it on purpose. It is working. Okay. Thank you. Thank you all for being here today. Especially want to recognize many of my colleagues here at the college who have come this afternoon, and wonderful colleagues. So thank you for coming. You know, I have had the opportunity of being president of an institution I love for these last 5+ years. Grew up in Fairview, just a few miles north of here. And when I first came, I had such a hard time when people would call me president. I'd look over my shoulder. I thought, who are they talking to? Because I've never been president of anything before, except my sixth grade class. And I did that for both years, so. Janet and I love Snow College. My remarks today are going to be a mixture of a brief report about the institution and some personal experiences that I hope that they intertwine. We love this building, and I'll spend a little more time about Snow College. I had the opportunity, as President Cockett knows, to be at Utah State University. And when I taught there, I taught, one of the courses that I taught in the graduate program was the historical, philosophical, and social foundations of education in the United States. And Horace Mann, back in the 1830s, was asked by the state of Massachusetts to be their Secretary of Education, which is the equivalent of the state superintendent of education. He was a lawyer, he was a legislator, and he just wasn't quite sure that he wanted to accept this assignment. And he was in Philadelphia at one time and in a hotel room, and he was in an upper level and he heard much noise and commotion. And he went to his window and he looked down on the street and he saw all this fighting and rioting. And as he looked down and saw all of that, he thought to himself, if those people had an opportunity for an education and employment, these things would not happen. Access. Access came to his mind, and he accepted that role and is often referred to as the father of common school in the United States. Universal access. Pretty much at that time, the life that you led was what you were born to. And now we look at the difference in the opportunities that are here that are afforded to us. The other thought about Horace Mann and Jefferson and others was that this great republic, if it was going to survive and be successful, that it was absolutely essential that there be access and the citizenry became educated. This is the great cause that we are all engaged in, regardless of our role. And I think every one of us has benefited because our forefathers and mothers opened some doors. And I just want to say that Snow College is very much a part of that access and opportunity. We're one institution, two campuses. We serve six counties. Can we dim the lights a little bit? There's a little reflection here. this building. And as a student, here at Snow College, took classes in this building. Where we're all sitting now was the attic. And the floor below us is where the ballroom was. And in about the mid-1990s, the building was worn out. And there was a request for a replacement or a renovation, and there was much debate as to whether or not to tear this down and build a new one or to save this building. And as you might imagine, it costs more money to save an old building. And President Day at the time fought very hard, along with some of our legislators, including Senator Blackham, to save this building. And the building was saved, and it stands as an icon to what Horace Mann and others actually paved the way for us. This building is more than just brick and mortar. It is a symbol of opportunity. It is an opportunity for many people to come here. Primarily now, it serves as an administration building, but we do have math classes in the basement. I hope that every time any of you think or pass the Noyes Building, that besides it being a beautiful building, that you see it as a symbol of opportunity and sacrifice and education. This college was established first as an LDS church academy. It was built with local labor and contributions, and when they got down to completely taking everything out of this building, there were no footings. It was just sitting there. And it took a great deal of work to save it. Took some support from the LDS church, and finally the building was built and now saved and can go on for many years. But as the college makes its journey through these 131 years of service, there have been challenges, ups and downs, and these challenges were evident very, very clearly in the early 1930s when the Depression had set in. And during that time, the church had decided that it was going to close many of its academies that it had started. President Morton said, I think that Weber was a part of the consideration at that very time. Snow College and Weber were on the horizon of being closed. And so, with much citizen effort and legislative support, finally the college was saved, but the church had said it was definitely going to close the college. And as you can see here, that the State Board of Education didn't want us either. It was the Depression. Why would they want to take on another financial liability at that particular time? But it was saved. And this college, along with its great service and sacrifice for it to be here in this rural area, it has weathered nearly every storm and will in the future. Its legacy is service, sacrifice, and endurance. I am so glad that I have been able to be a part of it in some small way. Through all of this, students have always been the priority. We hear about the spirit of snow, or the warmest snow on earth, but it is students. As we talk about building enrollments and attracting students here, many don't know about Snow College. And in the first semester, as we get some students, perhaps from larger urban areas, and they come here and they wonder, what will we do in Ephraim, Utah, or Richfield, Utah? What is there to do? Certainly there's no mall, there are a couple of theaters, a few eating establishments. And after that first semester, generally for most students, they're convinced they want to stay here. And by the time that they graduate or complete their programs, it's hard for them to leave. And many express that they wish that they could stay longer. Why does that happen? It happens because of the great people here who care about students. And that's what happened throughout the legacy of this institution. Non-perishable produce against tuition expense. Teachers taking it in lieu of their salary. Donating to the employment fund, housing students, or helping to find housing. I want to take just a moment right now and ask all of our Snow College employees to stand because they're the same kind of people. And will you join me in recognizing them? They truly care about students. I see lights on late at night. As soon as Janet and I finish dragging Maine on Ephraim Main Street, we come by and the lights on. We talk with students and ask them why they come to Snow College, and many of them say family connection or my friend's coming or it's cheap, and I correct them and say no, it's affordable. And then as soon as we get over that, they say it's because the professors know our name, the staff people help us. And that's what has continued and will continue to build upon our legacy. Our legacy really is about students. The girl on the right, the taller girl, her name is Melissa. And she attended here, I think President Wyatt, just before you came or shortly after. It was about a year ago that through my brother, her family, let us know that she had contracted cancer. And that she was really thinking about her days at Snow College. And they wanted us to know that in this period of ending her time here on this earth, that that's what she was thinking about. This girl on the right, this beautiful young Katie, tragically lost her life just a few weeks ago here in the foothills east of Ephraim. She was riding a four-wheeler and went up a hill that flipped her back, and she lost her life. And she was on track to graduate and had met just a few hours earlier with her ecclesiastical leader so that she could become a volunteer and serve a mission for her church. As I, a couple of weeks ago, went up to visit with her family and talked with them and took them her diploma, it was such a special and touching experience because here's the other message. Not only is this a great institution with a long legacy and a lot of sacrifice and endurance, but education is personal. It's personal to them. It's personal to every student who comes here. As we talk about systems and policies and budgets and institutions, it's personal. Every student has a story. Every student's family cares. And unfortunately, when situations or circumstances or events happen like this, it even brings it more strongly to the surface. This institution, Snow College, cares about students. As I share some information with you about our progress in certain areas, it's only meaningful if every one of us will put the face of a student on those pieces of data. And I know that my fellow colleagues as presidents feel the same way, from the largest institutions to the smallest, like us. It's not about budgets and policy and so forth. Those are only tools and avenues to serve the students who come to our care. I think you'll recognize this young lady. I doubt you'll recognize this young man. I actually did have hair at one point. Janet and I met here at Snow College, and so our story is also a bit personal. We met right out the front of this noise building, and ours is personal. So our journey, as we finished our time here at Snow, we transferred President Crockett to Utah State, and now we had the very great blessing and privilege to come back here and be a part of this institution in this role with these wonderful folks and students. And our journey was encouraged by our mothers. Both of us were raised for much of our youth by single mothers. Janet's mother on the left on your left was a school teacher, and unfortunately, Janet's father was killed in a hunting accident. But her mother was educated, had a teaching certificate, and was able to take care of Janet and her brother. My mother was a very bright and intelligent person, raised in Moroni, had 8 children, lost her first husband in a construction accident on the Hoover Dam in 1933, and then married my father. And she never had the privilege of going to college. Her life was tough, even up until her later years, where she worked at the turkey plant in Moroni just to keep things going. But you know what? She never wavered in terms of what she wanted for her children. Education, education, and education. All of us have stories. All of our students have stories. This is part of our personal journey and our story. As we came to Snow College just over 5 years ago, the college, with President Wyatt's leadership and Melanie Jenkins, our assistant vice president now, who was the co-chair, had just completed a strategic plan. This strategic plan had 5 primary themes or goals: quality, general education, 2-year, 4-year degrees, economic development, and cost and affordability. In quality, we really wanted to continue to emphasize the importance of teaching. In general education, rather than to have, and I'm not going to go through everything, but rather than to have all separate general education classes that might be somewhat siloed, that the disciplines would be integrated and concentrate on those other very essential skills of communication and writing, teamwork, and so forth. That's happening, thanks to the legislature a year ago who funded that, and the leadership here at the college of Melanie and Steve Hood. That will be happening. Our 2-year and 4-year degrees, our music 4-year degree, the software engineering 4-year degree, and our partnership with Utah State University with the business school, and we're looking at the partnership in education. This college can serve our area and the state by standalone degrees and partnering with our sister institutions. Economic development. The college has always had a very important role in economic development in this area. And the college has historically done wonderful things, custom fit small business centers and so forth. But a year ago, the legislature funded a position for us to be able to have an economic development liaison and to have someone who could oversee that. And we were fortunate enough to hire Darren Owens. And not only is Darren a great economic development, we've seen some changes in just this almost a year. And the economic development directors and county commissioners and city leaders have noticed the change in our interest and the college's ability to support that. And I know Darren is pioneering that, along with the people who are already serving in other areas. Our K-16 liaison, our partnership with the public schools, is so important. They're colleagues. We're in different systems, but we're all having the same responsibility with just different age students. Cost and affordability, we continue to do as they did those many years ago, and that is to keep it affordable. And with the help of our trustees and legislators and regents, we are able to keep this affordable, relatively speaking. It's never inexpensive, but it's an investment anywhere worth making. And perhaps one of the things that our colleagues in the 1930s might really, really appreciate when they accepted non-perishable goods for their salaries. The legislature funded our study to bring our faculty and staff up to national median.
and they deserve it. They work hard, they care, and they're at national median. We have seen a number of things happen. Anecdotes are that one young couple came to me and said, now we can stay, we were going to leave. We can buy a house. Our applicant pools have gone from 10 to 16 to sometimes 20 to 60. And our retention is much better. And beyond that, I hope that our faculty and staff know how much we value them and how important they are, and that they have just a little bit more discretionary money, because many of them have children and activities, and they want to be able to pay for those as well. They're worth it. And so I'm really, really pleased that the legislature would fund that for the college. I'm not going to spend additional time on this, but as I told the regents and the trustees this morning, that Melanie Jenkins, again our assistant vice president, did a little report card for us last summer as to how well we had done on this. We have completed every single one that every single area where there is a place that it can be completed, like compensation, bring it to the national median or the GA program. Some of these are ongoing. And that is, first of all, it was a very good strategic plan. And secondly, with the help and cooperation of our faculty and staff and the support of others, the strategic plan has come to this point. Now, as we welcome our new president, President Cook, we purposely have not started a new strategic plan. And there's an opportunity here for you, President, to begin a new strategic plan and lead the college into the future, which I'm sure you will. So thank you. We wanted to share with you 87% this last fall semester that are taking 30 credits a year, or 59%, and it bounces up and down, but that's very, very significant as we try and hold our retention rate. This commencement class of 2 weeks ago, 85%, 45% graduation, and 39% transfer. I think President Huftelin will be very, very much on board in recognizing how difficult it is to get completion, and circumstances different. I think Salt Lake Community College does a wonderful job, but it is really our responsibility to get them there. With mental health, you can see the number of sessions attended per year and how much that has gone up since 2011 and 2012 to the 18-19 academic year. The health of our students in every way, physical and emotional and mental, it may be about retention, but it's about helping them to be successful in their lives. As I've visited with our Wellness and Counseling Center, they share with me that the two most common reasons that students will come to see them are anxiety and depression. And there is help for these students. And our center is doing so much. Wellness advocates, we have a team of 12 trained students. We're increasing our access to services. And Vice President Matthew and the folks are working on the five-year plan that will soon emerge. We are also, 2 years ago, the students voted to increase their student fees, and we added a third counselor, so we have 3 full-time and 5 part-time. We are out of space, and it's creating longer waits, unnecessarily so. So we are creating over in the business building in the portable classroom new space for them, and they are designing that. It will be operational at the beginning of the next academic year. In the long run, we're hoping that the new proposed social science building will have space for them, or an urgent care center that is also on the horizon. I don't know how to sum this up except to say that institutions are institutions. And without people who care and work both internally and externally, there just isn't going to be the outcome or the success that we all desire. So to the Board of Trustees, whom I would like to ask to stand and be recognized, I just think these are great people. We have some trustees here. Would you please stand, those trustees who are here? Thank you. The Board of Regents, I hope you know, and I have expressed on a number of occasions, that we know that you know about Snow College and that you care about Snow, and you've been so supportive as you overlook all of the institutions and balance that out. It's not an easy pathway for any of you. An absolutely awesome faculty and staff that we've recognized. I reorganized the President's Cabinet a year ago, and I keep kicking myself thinking and wishing that I would have come to my senses earlier. We have a wonderful cabinet, 8 of us. We meet every Monday morning, 4 men and 4 women. Will the cabinet please stand and be recognized? We have women in leadership positions that I just so proud that these very highly qualified people have come to these positions. We have 2 assistant vice presidents in leadership positions. Our controller, our budget officer, our director of facilities and grounds, and I'm so pleased. And they're there because they're good and they're competent and they help us a lot. And the bonus is that they balanced us out in terms of male and female ratio, and I'm so grateful for that. Our wonderful 6-county area, the communities, the commissioners, I hope they know, and I think they do, the school districts know that we are wanting to serve them. Well, one floor down, and again, that was the ballroom. If you look real closely, I think this was taken in the 1940s, 1930s. If you look real closely, I just want to assure you I'm not in the picture. But it's always been about students. In meeting with our colleagues in the public school districts, we established a Snow College, Snow Promise Scholarship just this year for about 100 students, and we asked the And Representative Owens, this goes hand in hand with access and what you've done with the Promise Scholarship. We've asked the districts if there are some students who are interested in college, and if you will, they're not getting any love, any financial scholarships or incentives. And we then asked the counselors and the administrations, principals to, we gave them an amount of money based on the size of their senior class and ask them to identify those students. We think we funded about enough partially for 100 students. I received this kind note from a student at JUAP High School just this week. While he's thanking us, I want to pay a special attention. Seeing that we have thought about students like me who are not the perfect 4.0, this really means a lot. Trust me, it will not be money wasted. I don't know if there's a better testament than a group of students that are out there that are college ready and college capable. I just want to end as I say that all my years have felt the spirit of Snow. It's been wonderful to be here. I showed you a picture of as a young man. You notice Janet hasn't changed, cut her hair. But I don't know, this other guy got pretty old. This was a gift, a caricature that was drawn for us as we leave. So I thank everyone and so appreciative. And now, one final thing. For those of you who would you stand? Everyone stand. Regents, everybody. Even if you're an Aggie, or a Wolverine, or a Thunderbird, for these next few seconds, you're going to be Badgers. Okay? Everybody's a Badger in here. One of my favorite traditions is go Badgers. On three, will you go with me? One, two, three. Go Badgers! I didn't see all of it. One, two, three. Go Badgers! Thank you so much. Thank you.
Well, thank you very, very much, President Carlston. We really are going to miss you a lot. So, thank you for all you've done. Okay, we'll proceed with our meeting now by going to, to tab AA, the general consent calendar. And are there any questions, comments about the consent calendar? If not, could I have a motion to accept it? It.
So moved.
A motion from Regent Lund, second from Regent Campbell. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. Turn the time over to Commissioner Bueller to talk about the Commissioner's work plan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In your board materials under tab BB is a proposed work plan. This is a draft, and I'm going to just give it a quick introduction and then turn things over to Associate Commissioner Spencer Jenkins. This is something that we traditionally have not done in this kind of a formal way, but with all of the work that we've all been doing, regents, presidents, the commissioner's office over the last few years, as we put some flesh to the strategic objectives of the Board of Regents, it became clear that we needed to have a way to really make sure that we are aligned and focused on the priorities of the Board of Regents as a commissioner's office, as a system, and to, as new ideas come up, to be able to measure them against the commitments we've already made and the resources we've already committed. And so that's the idea behind this. And so all of the staff of the commissioner's office has put a lot of effort into this thus far. We thought at this point it would be good to preview it to you, not have it as an action item today, but as an information item, and then be coming back to you in the near future for your formal approval. So with that, let me just turn the time over to Spencer to go through.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. And just for a little bit of added context, you'll recall the January meeting when you adopted the strategic, I guess it was the 2018 annual report. Part of your direction to us was to come back with this work plan for the fiscal year 2020. So that's why you have it before us. As Commissioner mentioned, it's for information at this point. It's a draft document, but we anticipate it'll be a document that we use throughout the coming year with some regular updates to you. We hope this will help the board anticipate some of the activities that are coming, and it'll provide some clarity from meeting to meeting on major projects from the Commissioner's office. You'll note in the memo, as well as in the report, there are five areas of activity in which these projects have fallen. This comes from a process within our office with staff where we collected submissions and surveyed the office of all the various activities we've been participating in and consolidated them into, right now, 19 different projects in these five areas. As I mentioned, as the Commissioner mentioned, this is draft. It's intended to get your take and feedback, whether it's in this meeting or over the next few weeks. We do hope to have a more finalized report as we go into July and as we enter the fiscal year. This, just for your information, process-wise, this was underway. I know there's a bit of a transition in our office. We anticipate as we transition over the next few weeks and months that this will probably take a little bit of a different, it could change. And so we hope that we'll stay engaged with the board and as well as with this transition that we'll stay on top of it. Just real quickly, as an overview into the projects, each project has a lead from the staff, from the office. We tried to identify a primary deliverable for each, from each of these projects as well as budget. You'll note that there are a couple of projects that in which there is not budget identified yet that are associated with some direction that's come from the board, and the two being primarily related to the transfer system that we're currently doing an RFP for, as well as a communication strategy. I think those that have been on the Regent's Strategic Communications Committee know we've been working with an agency. Their contract is up at the end of this fiscal year, and we'll need to figure out if we are able to renew that contract, as well as some other activities going into the next fiscal year. Also, you'll note at the end of this document, there's also two areas that identify what we anticipate in terms of policy changes or new policies, as well as the potential audits that the audit committee will prioritize for the upcoming year. So with that, that's just a brief introduction and overview. I'm not going to go into the individual projects unless you want to, and happy to take questions or allow the commissioner to take it from there.
Are there questions or comments from the board? And again, this is not static, so this isn't your one and only chance, obviously, but we think that we hope you'll take some time, if you haven't already, to take a look at this. I think this aligns with the work that we have been doing. The resources are challenging. I'll just remind you that with the College Access Advisors, that we looked, scrubbed our budget very thoroughly, and we repurposed $1 million in our office towards that, for that expansion. We don't have too many rabbits to pull out of the hat, you know, frankly. So we're going to have to continue to look very hard to see how do we fund these things that are not funded, or are there things on the list that are not as high a priority for the board and that we then should repurpose those. And so this will be a good challenge. I would have liked to have finished it, sorry, but I think with the interim commissioner and working with the staff, and I guess it would never be finished anyway, but rather than try to bring this to a conclusion today, it seemed to make more sense to bring it to you as an information item and know that, as Spencer said, we are in transition in our office over the next several weeks, and so there'd be plenty of opportunities to make whatever changes need to be made. So with that, are there questions, comments, feedback on this at this point?
Okay. I think this doesn't need approval. It's really for informational purposes only, so appreciate that. Commissioner, would you like to talk about the cybersecurity funding under tab CC?
Yes, thank you. Well, as you know, over the last few years, our institutions have made a number of strides in cybersecurity. This has been a high priority of the Board of Regents over the last couple of budget requests to the legislature. And I've consulted with the presidents. You may remember, Regents will remember, that last July we had the CIO for the system and the University of Utah, Steve Hess, present in a closed session, which I think left everybody feeling fairly sobered about the challenges that are there. The actions that have been taken thus far over the last few years are summarized on tab CC, but they include biennial IT security audits, multi-factor authentication, data breach insurance. There's been significant progress made. This year in our budget request, we requested $7.15 million from the legislature, and those are outlined on page 2 of the memo of the purposes for that. Part of this action item is to, in keeping with legislative intent, the portion of performance funding that is not allocated under the current formula this year, a little over $1 million, is intended to go towards these needs, and those details are listed here as far as to be an ongoing basis for next generation network firewalls, advanced malware endpoint protection. We've received a lot of input from our chief information officers throughout the system. These are the most serious risks that we need to address. In addition, in working with the presidents, we are asking, and this was, you know, we talked about a few different options, but the option that we settled on was for them to take an additional step and look in their own budgets and see how they can prioritize some additional funding to meet some of these additional needs, and that is detailed on the bottom of page 2. And so the recommendation is to approve the $1,500,000 of the unallocated portion of performance funding for cybersecurity needs in the system, and to require the institutions to submit a plan to the commissioner's office by July 1, 2019, describing how they will address unfunded ongoing cybersecurity needs for the Edge network that are not covered by this $1 million. So that's a quick summary, but I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Any questions, Regent Jones?
Yes, it is. It is, but I think that the challenge is an even larger heartburn, and I think the presidents are sensitive to this, would be the idea of having a major breach, which we read about in the paper every day, that where we have lots of personally identifiable information, student, you know, social security numbers, in some cases health care and hospital records. And so this was the place that I had another alternative that we discussed, and this was the alternative that the presidents and I settled on, that would be better for them to take a look at their budgets and see how they can meet this next most pressing need, and to report back. Eventually ongoing, but initially it could be one time as well.
Are we prepared to revisit the legislature next year?
Yes. I'm sure we are. I'm sure we are. But having asked twice and not been too successful in consulting with board leadership as well, felt that we can't just continue to say, well, they didn't fund us, so we won't do anything. So that's kind of where we came down with this recommendation.
How was this allocation determined? I mean, it's not based on headcount. Is it an assessment of actual servers that need to be replaced by institutions?
Yes. Thank you, Regent Campbell. I probably should have indicate that is exactly what it is. It's based on the inventory of the most aged components, the networks, you know, the network security, the servers and the routers and those kinds of things. It's based on an inventory. The actual need here is about $37 million. So this is taking the worst of the worst and saying we're going to find ways to start addressing.
I might ask, we've got Steve Hayden, Chief Information Officer of the University of Utah. Anything you'd care to come up and say about the situation that we face and kind of the funding of it, Steve?
Yeah, what's happened in the system is that we have...
Can you come up to a mic?
Maybe I can give you a mic there. Okay. So
in the system, we've built buildings, and usually in the construction costs, the switches, and now there are two things we're trying to do. They're the edge switches, and then there's the access points. Access points are wireless. They usually need to be replaced about every 5 years. Switches about every 10 years. We build a building. Those are in the construction cost, but we've not found a way to replace those, and that's what this addresses. Not replacing those is a significant security issue. And we do have institutions that have 16 to 20-year-old access points and switches, and some of the institutions don't have up-to-date firewalls, which are the first line of defense in any kind of IT security system. So that's how it was addressed. We came up with the inventory, and we thought, as a Regent's request, that we could take this on as a system request. Be happy to answer any other questions.
Yeah, this is, I think of this as a little like insurance. I mean, it's money you don't like to spend until you have a fire and you're glad you did. I mean, the difference is that we have people out there trying to start fires every day. I mean, we've got a lot of sort of arsonists, if you will.
It's an ongoing battle.
It's a real
battle.
It's
a war unseen, but yeah. It's a battle every day.
Yeah. Other questions or comments?
Is there?
Yes, President Williams.
I just want to make sure, you know, speaking of myself and Dixie State, we filed this. know you think it's being an aggressive approach on our thing, but we're going to forego having 24-hour coverage for safety and adding a mental health counselor. This is something that needs to be done now, according to this request, as it's mandatory. But, you know, going through our budget, I don't want the board that reads through these to think that, oh, you know, they're being passive-aggressive, but this is painful, especially if you look, you know, from the Finance Committee, we lost $750,000 of performance money, now to take another $216,000. Not only mental health and public safety, but it's also back. So this is going to be a difficult thing to do. It's definitely necessary, but there's also other things, you know, mental health and teaching your classes and advising things. This is not going to be easy. I pose the question, you know, is this going to be something that's not very easy to do? I just want the board to know, because you'll see in our letter, this is how we're funding it. And I didn't want to come across as, you know, aggressive or anything like that, but that's the fact of the matter.
I may just comment. I appreciate President Williams making that comment, because these are not just apples on the tree waiting to be plucked. That it takes some hard decisions at the institutional level as well. And but you know, this is something we need to figure out how to address. So that's why I'm making the recommendation to you.
Yes, Regent Jensen.
Does insurance, cyber insurance, play a role in this at all at an institution or system wide?
So, cyber insurance used to be easy to get. It's not so easy anymore. And some of the requirements is that you need to segment your network, and they have to update your network in order to qualify for premiums that you can afford. So, the stakes are going up, and if an institution doesn't have an up-to-date network, they're ultimately going to have to pay more for cyber insurance.
I think, too, in my experience, cyber insurance is of probably limited worth, particularly in a setting like higher education. It will pay for reconstructing data, things like that. That's probably not going to be our problem. What they can't reconstruct is the reputational damage that takes place. And
well, you have to, you're fined. If you have a breach, you're fined by the Office of Civil Rights. They're fairly significant. They can be millions of dollars, depending on the loss of data. So part of what the cyber insurance covers are those fines as well. Then there's the diagnostics as to what occurred, how many people were impacted. And then you have to mail out to all the people that were impacted a mailer indicating that their data has been lost. So that's kind of what cyber insurance covers.
Yes, Regent Lund.
I'm on the wrong committee to understand the process of how building maintenance is reserved for. But it seems like we're going to continue to fight this fight until we actually have reserves being set aside for building maintenance that includes, you know, these security updates, equipment updates. Is that in the offing at all, or is that a conversation that's begun?
Did it come out of O&M?
Yeah.
We have proposed that, have not been successful. Getting it out of building.
Do you have anything you'd want to add on that, Rich?
I'd say that I think there's opportunity, and some institutions have gone down our capital improvement for new improvement building. They maybe add some to it. So I think there's ongoing discussions. It's collaboration between the facility side and the IT side. So I think the more that we go down that route, I think we'll be successful. And it's a big picture. I mean, there's a lot to be done.
Well, in the future, it seems like that may be an answer. If we're going to set funds aside to replace the water heater, then we ought to be setting funds aside to replace the other hard assets there that become obsolete.
And it's beyond capital improvements that would be part of the O&M, the spending on the O&M as well, because capital improvements can be time in the chair, and we don't necessarily get the dollars associated with that. But we do get ongoing funding for O&M for some of the buildings. But we can start to think about it differently in terms of, and it's a partnership with the SCM that we have to engage in as well. But to think about it differently, too, it's not just the hard building, doors, locks, those types of things. It's also the soft side of the building in terms of the software that's running your HVAC, that's running your security cameras and all of those things as well. So done, it's just going to be a transition, and it will take some time, and it will be a change for the institutions in the way that they manage their O&M moving forward.
If I could just, Mr. Chair, just I kind of said this, but I want to underline it. I don't want you to think that this issue will be over, even if you approve this today. Because again, this is an identified $37 million need that we're addressing with a couple of million dollars, the most critical pieces of it. And so this is going to be an ongoing concern.
Have you modeled the cost of switching completely to the cloud? Because, you know, in my previous life, at least the enterprises that I worked with and governments that I worked with always modeled their 10-year thing and how they